So we're in John chapter 10, and we are in Proverbs 27. And we're going to start in John 10, then I'm going to read Proverbs 27, then I'm coming back to John 10 to talk a little bit, and then we'll look at some other verses as well. So in John chapter 10, I'll begin in verse number 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is a hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming and leaveth the sheep and fleeth. And the wolf catcheth them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is a hireling and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. Now watch this phrase. And know my sheep and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. Now let's turn, if you will, with me to Proverbs 27. Look with me in verse number 23. Let me move my marker so I don't lose my place. Proverbs 27, and then in verse 23. Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds. I think 27:23 kind of tells us where we're going in this principle, because it kind of gives it into a nutshell. But we're going to use also John 10 to help us understand something here. When we come to John 10, especially as you look at all of these verses, there are just an abundance of things that jump out at us. Oh, there's all kinds of great things here from John chapter 10. Even in these few verses we read, but the whole chapter itself, a lot of great things. Probably the most the obvious truth that's often preached is in verse 11. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. And so we think about the gospel, think about Christ dying for us. Obviously, some wonderful truths there. And that thought really permeates our whole text here in John chapter 10. But what I would tell you is if we're not careful, we look at this beautiful, we'll say beautiful forest of truth in John chapter 10, and we forget about the individual trees that make up that forest. Because within this great text, this great truth being taught in John 10, there are some specific trees, specific nuggets of truth that we can dig out that I think can help us in this particular Bible study tonight. So there's some wonderful things, but I want to point out something that isn't directly tied to Jesus giving his life for us, but it is, I think, in a general sense, tied to that. Sometimes when we're teaching the Bible, it's like going to Mitchell's ice cream, or Toff's, depending on, I guess, your desire, which one you like. If you ever go to one of them, and the biggest challenge is picking one. That's the biggest challenge. Now, I know you can go there and get a couple added together, but if you're just going to pick one, that's kind of a challenge, because you're like, man, that's good, and that's good, and that's good, and that's good. All of them are good, but eventually you have to make a choice, especially if you're going to choose one. You have to make a choice, and you got to focus on that choice. And so the flavor or the choice that we're going to look at is really in verse 14. So there's a lot of ice cream, if you'll let me, a lot of flavors here in this text. But the one we're going to look at, the tree, the one flavor, whichever analogy works for you, is in verse 14, where he says, I am the good shepherd, which ties into verse 11. But then he says, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. And then in Proverbs, he says this in verse 23, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds. And so this idea of knowing and then responding based on that knowledge. So let me give you a couple of things by way of introduction that will lead us to several applications of this principle. Jesus, knowing his sheep in verse 14, where he says, I'm the good shepherd, know my sheep, is connected with Jesus knowing the Father in verse 15. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father. So he's talking about knowing the sheep in verse 14, then he's talking about knowing the Father in verse 15. Now, whatever is inclusive in one would be inclusive in the other and back and forth, because he's using the same wording, if you will, in both. I know my sheep, I know the Father. So let's think about this knowing the Father and then apply it back to knowing the sheep. It wasn't just that he, Jesus, could point out his Father in a crowd. When he says, I know my Father, it wasn't simply to say, yeah, that's him right there. It was more than simply identify him. But he knew what his responsibility was to the Father. When he said, I know my Father, I know my Father's will. I know what he expects from me. I know this responsibility that I have from the Father. I know the Father. Now hold your place in John 10. Go with me to John 6. So we're trying to kind of lay a foundation here so that as we get to the application, we're not just making huge jumps in our logic or our thinking. So in John chapter 6, so we're talking about knowing the Father, knowing his responsibilities from the Father, and then we'll apply that about knowing the sheep. So in John chapter 6 and verse 37, all that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which he hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I'll raise him up at the last day. So he understood he had this responsibility. So his knowledge of the Father equated to a responsibility he had to the Father. I know the Father, I know his will, and because I know him and know his will, I have a responsibility from the Father. So this knowledge, this knowing the Father, equated to a responsibility he had to the Father as well. Now let's apply it to the sheep. So too, Jesus' knowledge of his sheep isn't just about identity, but also intimacy. When he says, I know my sheep, it isn't simply he can just look at you and call your name. It means he knows you, he knows things about you, and he understands a responsibility he has towards us. Which, let's add one more kind of thought, and we're getting close to the application part. Jesus knew what his responsibility was to the sheep, and was determined to fulfill it. Now, if we now apply this to us about our own leadership, that means that when we talk about responsibility, it's understanding what the Lord expects from us and how I need to do what I need to do in order to fulfill that responsibility. Let's go back to John 10, look at verse 14. I am the good shepherd and know my sheep and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. In other words, this responsibility I have is going now to result in a certain action I'm going to take. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father. Now, obviously, there's great truths about salvation here. I'm in no way, in any way, disregarding that or making light of it. But if we apply it to the area of leadership, Jesus knew the Father's will, and knowing that will resulted in a responsibility he had. I know what the Lord wants, therefore my responsibility to the sheep is to lay down my life. So this idea of knowing the sheep, so when... If we go back now to Proverbs 27, where it says, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, it's not simply to look at whoever you're responsible for and simply know who they are. The idea is to know them intimately enough and know what your responsibility towards them are and then fulfill that responsibility. That's the time an intimate knowledge about them that now gives us a responsibility for them. So now if we apply this into this concept of leading biblically, we'd say this, leading biblically includes knowing what our responsibility is in that leadership and then being determined to fulfill it because this is what the Lord's will would be for us. So how would we apply this in our own Christian life? Well, let me give you several thoughts. I think I have three for you tonight. Let me give you the first one, the big number one. Ready? A leader must take responsibility for what he has been given to lead. That seems pretty simple, doesn't it? But it's not always that way. In fact, I think if you look at our nation, our society, there's a lot of not taking responsibility of people that they have. Like, there's dads who don't take responsibility for their kids. You know, to me, isn't it, just in a conceptual way, isn't it a shame that the court has to chase down guys to get them to pay for their own kids? that's irresponsible, is it not? You know, if you're going to, let me say this carefully, I don't want to be crass. If you're going to be man enough to produce kids, you ought to be man enough to provide for your kids. Okay? But anyways, nonetheless, gets back to this. So a leader must take responsibility for what he has been given to lead. Now let's apply this a little bit more. Leadership responsibility is given to man by God. We don't just come up with ourselves. We don't just run in and say, I'm going to take charge. Well, some people do, but that's really not what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be, Lord, what is my responsibility of leadership here? So leadership responsibility is given to man by God. It is God that has instituted human leadership authority. Now, how do I know that? Because the Bible tells me. Where does it tell me that? Romans 13. So let's go to Romans 13 together. Now, I think there's misunderstanding about this because people tend to skip over certain words that are included in Scripture. Verse number 1, let every soul be subject unto the, now notice this word higher, that's a word that a lot of people skip over, unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, and that word power means authority. For there is no power, no authority but of God. The powers that be, the authorities that be, are ordained of God, set up by God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, now what power are we talking about? The power that is set up by God. That's the context of verse 1 of 13. Okay, so whatever authority the Lord has ordained, that therefore, if it's ordained authority, we're not supposed to resist it. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive themselves damnation. So it is God that has instituted human leadership authority. The Lord has set up human authority over us. We can't be a bunch of rebels, not listening to anyone. It doesn't mean necessarily we're a bunch of drones who listen to everyone, because we'll talk about that in a moment, but there are authorities over us that we need to yield ourselves to because this is the Lord's will. It is God that appoints different people to fill those positions of authority. So a leader has responsibility because this is how the Lord has set it up. He's put human people in positions of authority, and that authority now brings about responsibility. Go with me to Psalm 75. I think I'm basically speaking to the choir here, but nonetheless, let's not assume anything. Let's look at Scripture to make sure we understand how we draw these conclusions. Psalm 75. These are probably the verses you're thinking anyways, but let's look at them together. Psalm 75, look with me in verse 6. For promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south. Notice there's a direction not mentioned. That's north. Talking about, in other words, it comes from the Lord. Verse 7, but God is the judge. He putteth down one, setteth up another. So this is talking about God putting people in positions of authority. He set up positions and he's put people in those positions. Proverbs chapter 8. Now, I need you to bear with me because when I get through this little piece here, before we get to big number 2, I have a couple caveats to give to you because I think there's some misunderstanding. Proverbs chapter 8, look with me in verse 14. And we'll read down to verse 17. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding, I have strength. By me kings reign and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. So the idea is that wisdom is necessary for this, but also the idea that through godly wisdom, God sets up through certain people, certain positions of authority. So it's God that appoints different people to fill those positions of authority. Now, how does that apply to me? Since my authority then, if I'm in a position of authority, my authority comes from God, then I must use it in a way that best honors God. Now, that's an important understanding to have. Authority that comes from God is supposed to be used to honor God. And what does that require? That requires then my earnest effort to responsibly lead and do my best. When I am giving some of responsibility, I need to realize ultimately, okay, so I go to James Cleveland or Molly Cleveland, because they're both Sunday school teachers, and I say, can you teach this class? And so they're set up in a position of authority. Now, who's ultimately are they serving? Are they serving me? Who are they ultimately serving? The Lord. That's a position of authority, and they have some leadership there, and they have responsibility there, and that ultimately is back to the Lord. So when they approach their class, they need to do it and they do. They do a great job. So I don't in any way mean this is a correcting statement. Okay, they do. They both do very, very good jobs. Okay, but when they approach their class, they need to approach it as, this is something the Lord has given me, and I need to do it in a way that best honors the Lord. I need to take care of this responsibility in a way that honors Him. Go with me to Colossians 3. Colossians chapter 3. Now, I would agree with you. If you're thinking, well, this is kind of pretty low-level type of teaching, at the moment it is, but I'm just trying to make sure we all have the same foundation. We understand we have authority. That authority comes from the Lord. That authority brings about corresponding responsibility, and that responsibility is done in a way that honors the Lord, because that's where originally it came from, the Lord. Colossians 3, look at verse 18. Colossians 3, verse 18. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Now watch what he says, as it is fit in the Lord. Because if your husband is leading, then he's doing that with the authority the Lord has given him. And so you follow your husband, not because you have a great husband, and you may, but because ultimately you're looking to the Lord in these things. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents in all things. No one has a perfect parent, but your parent is given to you from the Lord, and so you obey because you're looking to the Lord in that. And as a parent, you lead your children, not because you have because you want them to goosed up around the house, but because you're trying to do it in a way that honors the Lord. For this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children unto anger, lest they be discouraged. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. Now look at verse 23. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men. Even if you're the follower, you're following as you're following the Lord. If you're a leader, you're leading it not because you're trying to get them just to follow you, but you're trying to get them to follow the Lord, authority given to you from the Lord. Knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward and inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons. So when we think about our leadership, we think about the responsibility the Lord has given us, and we're very careful. We want to do our best. If I have a job, I want to do my best at it. Not because we're simply trying to make people happy, but because this is what the Lord has given us. I'll give you an example. I get teased, really, I guess. I'm thinking it's teasing. I don't think that people are really being mean to me. Hopefully not. But when we set up the chairs here, there is a way we set them up. It may not seem it to you, but there is a way. Those chairs are a little off now. I look at them. There's a line here that these front chairs fall in. There's a certain distance from this little piece here that goes to that, and it's measured out that way. It's measured out that way. We have two different sticks depending on how close we want the chairs together. We space the chairs. All that is done. And we measure from the wall. We measure from that wall. We kind of measure in between here and there, and it's all done. Now, I don't do that, so when people walk in, they go like this. Wow. These chairs look nice, because no one's ever said that I know of. But because it's a responsibility given me to the Lord, why shouldn't I try to do my best at it? I know how to use a tape measure. I can put a stick between chairs. I can make sure they're kind of lined up. Of all these chairs here, if we just sat them up in any mishmash type of way, you could still find a place to sit. But it looks like no one's taking it seriously. So when we do our job, we want to do it in a way that honors the Lord, that we take seriously what the Lord has given us. That's why if someone has a class, they decorate it. Why? Because it's serious. It's not because I'm just trying to... Now, I'm sure they do it for the kids as well, but ultimately we do it for the Lord. You know, when they decorate the church, they take it seriously. Any responsibility, we take it seriously because it's responsibility given to us, the Lord. And it causes us then to want to do our best. Now, watch this statement. To do less than my best in whatever area of responsibility I've been given is to shortchange Jesus. Because I'm doing it for him. And so I want to do my best in these things. I don't want to just throw something together and say, eh, it's okay. Eh, no one will know the difference. Well, the Lord will, and I'm doing it for the Lord. Now let me stop. And I'm going to put this Bible study on hold for a minute. I want to back up because along this line, there's some misunderstanding. More than I thought there was. Over the last couple of years, I've realized people have a big misunderstanding about the Bible and about human authority. In ways I never thought our group would have problems with it. So let me give you a couple understandings here. I'll give you two caveats. Caveat number one. And I'm going to say this. I've heard this since I was a teenager. I figured everyone knew this, but somehow, some people missed that class somehow. Caveat number one. No human authority. Okay, so our authority comes from whom? From the Lord. No human authority has the right to violate God's authority, because your authority comes from the Lord, and you have no right to take authority and go against the Lord, because the authority comes from him, and so whatever we do has to be in obedience to him. Now, I think that's important, because when we get to Romans 13, people use Romans 13. Let me give my hobby horse, because this is something that just irritates the fire out of me. There are pastors in Ohio who shut down their church because of Romans 13. They say, well, that's what the government wants. Well, here's my response of what the government wants. I don't care what they want. They didn't start the church. Jesus did. Now, when I find a verse that says shut it down so because I don't want to get sick, then we can talk about it. But you say, well, you know, Romans 13 says we're supposed to obey the higher power. Exactly. Who's the higher power when it comes to the church? Not the governor. Okay, that little sawed-off dwarf elf guy is not the leader of the church. I have some issues with that guy, by the way. I don't know if you could tell that. Okay? So, when it comes to... Now, watch what I'm about to say. When it comes to freedom, freedom does not come from the government. Freedom comes from God. Government does not give us freedom. Can I tell you something? Okay, I know I'm off the Bible study, but I enjoy this one. I enjoy more than this one at the moment. You know our forefathers who helped form the framework we have as a government, our constitutional republic, they were not big cheerleaders of what they gave us. In fact, when our constitution was formed, a lot of people said, I don't know about that. In fact, some states wouldn't vote for it until we came up with the first 10 amendments. They said, we want it written down in amendments to the Constitution of what the government cannot do. You know why? Because they don't trust the government. Okay, we have a long history of not trusting the government. You know why? Because government power usually enslaves its people. That's what government likes to do. And so I have no biblical reason to surrender what the Bible tells me to do in order to make the government happy. And the freedom I have from the Lord. The freedom of speech does not come because of the Constitution. It comes from the Lord. My freedom of expression, my freedom of religion, all the freedoms I enjoy come from the government. Come from God. And the whole role of government is to protect those freedoms. Not to grant them, but to protect them. So ultimately, authority comes from the Lord, and that's to whom we look to in these things. And the higher power of all powers is the Lord himself. Now, I will agree there are some areas that that the Bible does not address. And it allows human authority to address those things. There's some things that are more local, like the city of North Ridgeville. Some things that override the city of North Ridgeville, which is Columbus, the state of Ohio. But you know this, you know Columbus cannot override everything that the city does, because home rule. Home rule says that certain things that cities can do, granted to them by the Ohio Constitution that the Ohio legislature cannot overrule. The city can tell them, go take a hike. They usually end up in court and fighting it out. So there's a higher power. Now, it's the city. Usually it's the state government. It's the constitution of the state. And there's something that even overrules the Ohio Constitution in some ways, and that is the U.S. Constitution. And there's something that overrules the U.S. Constitution. It's called the Word of God. And so that's the higher power. And when anytime there's a conflict, you look to the higher one. If the Bible doesn't mention it, then we look to the Constitution. If the Constitution doesn't mention it, we look to the Ohio Constitution. If it doesn't mention it, we look to ORC, Ohio Revised Code. If that doesn't mention it, we look to the local ordinances of the city we live in. But we look to the higher powers and obey those higher powers. That's caveat number one. No human authority has the right to violate God's authority. So authority comes from the Lord. We never have a right to violate it by our own authority. Caveat number two. Not every person in a position of authority is there as a blessing. So we sometimes think, well, you know, if God allowed President Biden to be the president, then, you know, he did it for our good. Maybe not so. You know, God puts people in positions of authority, sometimes as a judgment to those people. Pastor White, you're just talking. I am. I get paid to. But there's some things in the Bible that I think support it. So let's look at it. Jeremiah 25. Jeremiah 25. And we'll come back to the Bible study, but we're just taking a break here because I think when we talk about responsibility and authority come from God, some people just have come up with ideas that are not biblical. My fellow fundamental, independent fundamental Baptist preachers over the last couple of years have said things that are so whacked. I'm like, what in the world are you saying? We've never thought that we should bow down to the government just because they want us to do something. Jeremiah 25, look at verse 7. Yet ye have not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord, that ye might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye have not heard my words, because I will sin and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. Now, he's not saying that as Nebuchadnezzar is a great guy. What he's saying is, I'm using him to do this. Here's someone I put in a position of authority, and I'm using him, but notice how he's using him. And will bring them against this land, and against the inhabitants thereof, and against all these nations round about, and will utterly destroy them, and make them an astonishment, and a hissing, and a perpetual desolations. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth, and the voice of gladness, voice of the bridegroom, the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones, the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation and astonishment. And these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Now, if you continue and study, you'll find out God eventually brings judgment against the Babylonians as well. But God is setting up Nebuchadnezzar in a position of authority, not as a blessing to Israel, but as a way to bring judgment. So sometimes God allows people to be in positions of authority as a way to bring judgment. And that's kind of an external. But there's also an internal side of that. So look with me to Isaiah chapter 3. People say, well, you know, if God doesn't judge America, I would say God is pretty much judging America. I don't think we are spared from God's judgment, and I would say that there is some judging going on. I think one of the ways we see judgment is seeing the people who lead us. What a circus. Isaiah chapter 3. We got a president who doesn't know what day it is most of the time. And we got a bunch of wackos in Congress who are doing everything that it seems like that would be the opposite of what an intelligent person would do. Isaiah chapter 3. If you wonder how I feel, we'll talk after the service. I know sometimes I beat around the bush. Isaiah chapter 3, look at verse 1. For behold, the Lord of hosts, doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water, the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient, the captain of 50 and the honorable man and the counselor and the cunning artificer and the eloquent orator. Now, so he's taking these away, which are the good ones. And now look at verse 4. And I will give children to be their princes. I don't think he's talking about people who are 10 years old, or in the case of Mike, these little kids who are 16. Okay? And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. I don't think he's talking about newborns. What I think he's talking about is the quality of their leadership is very immature, selfish, like little kids. Can I tell you, doesn't that kind of look like who's leading us right now? It doesn't matter what party you're talking about. They just seem to be just, I mean, there's a few shining lights maybe, but for the most part, it's like, if we had a contest to find the most incompetent people to lead us, I don't think we'd have picked these, because we wouldn't have been that good to pick them. But these are seem to be the most incompetent people to lead us at the moment. And so there are people in positions of authority, not always to bless us, but sometimes to bring judgment or chastening upon us. But nonetheless, all that said, ultimately we know that all authority comes from the Lord, and the Lord brings authority into our life, and we have to submit to that authority, whichever is the higher power of that authority, and never in violation of Scripture. So that's big number one. Let's go back to our Bible study now. All right? Thanks for bearing with me. Got it off my chest. A leader must take responsibility for what he has been given to lead. Okay, that's the first thing we understand. Whatever area I've been given to lead, I need to take responsibility. I can't just throw it off and ignore it. Big number two. A leader may have to relinquish his responsibility, but should never abandon it. Now, let me tell you what I mean by that. Go back with me to John chapter 10. So we're talking about leading biblically. So I look at my responsibilities given to me by the Lord. All the authority and the responsibility kind of goes hand in hand. So I look at this responsibility the Lord has given me. I need to take it seriously because it's from the Lord. But there are times in putting forth that effort and the responsibility, I realize that maybe because of either the multiplicity of responsibility I have or the nature of that responsibility, I may have to relinquish it in some way, either through a delegating, which is not truly relinquishing it, but in some ways it is. I'm not exactly hands-on with it. Or in other ways, I may have to say, you know, someone else needs to be responsible because, you know, I got this and this and this and other things going on. But I just never abandon. I just never say, well, I can't do it. I'm just going to throw my hands up and walk away. I never abandon it that way. I may have to relinquish it, but never abandon it. Now, that brings us to John chapter 10. Look at verse 14. He says, I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and know none of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Now look at verse 27. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. So we know, I'm giving you like a three-step thing here. So we know, first of all, Jesus knew and cared for his sheep. That's very clear from John chapter 10. Now, go with me to John 21. Look with me in verse 15. So he knew and cared for his sheep. Now Jesus is about to leave, physically, not spiritually. I mean, he's God, he's everywhere. But the physical sense of his ministry is over here, getting ready to be over very soon in John 21. Okay, he's already died on the cross. He's always resurrected. This is one of his post-resurrection appearances. John chapter 21, verse 15. So when they had dined, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He said to him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He said to them, watch this, feed my lambs. He's still concerned about his sheep, isn't he? He said to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He says unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He said unto him, feed my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he said unto him third time, lovest thou me? And he said to him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. So, again, we understand there's other things being taught here, but in this concept of responsibility. So he knew and cared for his sheep. He's about to ascend to heaven, and so now he delegates this. He has to, in some way, relinquish that responsibility. He's not there like he was for those 3.5 years. He's not there on earth in that physical way that he was. And so now he says to Peter, Peter, I need you to feed my sheep. And he delegates that responsibility to Peter and obviously to other apostles as well, as you'll see in other verses. So he delegates that. He makes sure the sheep is still taken care of. Now go with me to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. Look with me in verse 1. The elders which are among you, I exhort, who am also an elder, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Now notice what he says now to these people who are coming up after him. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, you shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. So just like Jesus now is has delegated to Peter and the other apostles, here you have Peter now delegating this same responsibility to them. Okay, you need to do this as well, because soon I'm going to be out of here. So we may have to relinquish our responsibility, but we never abandon it. So what am I saying about this? Well, watch this. I should never casually or flippantly walk away from my responsibility. There are times when I'm not filling the pulpit for various reasons. Sometimes I'm on vacation, sometimes I'm on my annual retreat, sometimes I may be gone for some other reason. But when I'm not here behind this pulpit, you know what I always make sure? That someone's going to be there, because it's my responsibility. Wouldn't it be kind of weird on a Sunday morning that you just showed up and I wasn't here, and people said, okay, well, anyone want to do something? And someone said, well, you know, I read something this morning, might be a help. Wouldn't it be kind of a irresponsible way for me to lead a church? Wouldn't you expect me to take responsibility for the authority entrusted me as the pastor of this church? Because this is what the Lord has me to do, so I can't just simply abandon it and walk away and say, yeah, well, y'all figure it out. If I was a Sunday school teacher, and again, I'm not trying to pick on our Sunday school teachers. They do a good job. I just happen to be on that hobby horse as well. But if I was a Sunday school teacher and I wasn't going to be in my class, you know what my concern would be? Can someone walk in after me and teach a lesson? I want to make sure that I have something for them. Here's my schedule. Here's my students. Here's the lesson. I want that to carry on. If I can't do it, someone needs to do it. Let's pick on the buses. So if I am a bus captain and for some reason I can't be there on a particular Sunday, I would want to make sure that there is a list of addresses with names connected to it so that people knew who to go pick up, because I still have a responsibility. I may have to relinquish. I can't be there that Sunday and run that route, but I'm not going to abandon my responsibility. I still want to make sure it's taken care of. And so this is what a leader does. He never flippantly walks away or carelessly deals with the responsibility. My concern for those I lead should make me concerned that someone else will be there to lead them when I cannot. That's why we disciple people. That's why there's Christian training that goes on inside of a church. There's going to come a day, and I realize that, and I kid around about it, but I understand my age. You know, we had a good youth activity, and they were there. I didn't know how smart these teenagers were. I was amazed at how smart they were, because I forget the illustration I gave, but it's something to do. I told them this is like my sixth group of teenagers, because, you know, you're only a teenager for so many years. It's not like a whole 30-year, 40, 50-year generation. I mean, you're a teenager from 12 to 17, basically. By the time you're 18, you're out and you're doing other things. So, you know, just 5-6 years. So anyways, I said, this is my sixth group of teenagers I dealt with. I've been doing this for 40 years. I said, I know I don't look 57. And two of those teenagers, one was Janelle at the end. She said, I thought you were 39 or something. And Tempest, and I could tell she just got saved because God has given her great insight and wisdom. She said, oh, Pastor, I thought you were 23 or something. I said, God bless you. I did not know I was among such wise teenagers like that. But the truth is, at 57, I have... And I'll quote Paul Becker. I have fewer years in my windshield than I do in my back window. In other words, I've lived a good chunk of my life already. And most likely, somewhere in the next, I don't know, few years, 8 years, something like that, it's going to be time to look for someone else to fill the role that I do here. Now, when that day comes, I think it would be a shame, it'd be just idiotic if I just one Sunday said, you know, folks, it's time for me to retire. This is my last service. I'm out of here. well, wait a minute, the church still has to move, go on after me. And so you start thinking about it. So I talk about it only because I am thinking about it. I want the church to last longer than my time here. I'd hate to think my last Sunday is the last Sunday of the church, unless it's the rapture. In that case, that's fine. We'll let certain of you stick behind and figure out what to do. So we want to make sure that someone else is still there. So we're concerned. We're concerned about our kids. We're concerned about our grandkids. We're concerned about whoever we have leadership over. So here's a question for you. What are you doing right now as a whatever area you have responsibility, secular, spiritual, whatever it is, what are you doing to make sure your responsibility is taken care of when you cannot take care of it? Because if you're leading something, that's your responsibility. That's why parents get insurance. Because they realize, you know, if something happened to me, I want to make sure my kids are taken care of. Okay, that's how we think like that. Okay, that's why we don't try to, hopefully we don't incur unneeded debt. Because I'd hate to think that, you know, I kicked a bucket and my whole family now is in the poorhouse because I've created all this debt and they can't afford to live. So who's going to take care of my responsibilities when I'm not here? I'm concerned. Now, I may not have control over it. I can't dictate who the next pastor is going to be. But I can try to prepare the church in a way so that responsibility continues on. I'll give you the third thought about this. So we're looking at leadership, leading biblically in the area of responsibility. Okay, this is just one principle among many principles we're looking at. I'll give you the third aspect of this, another way to look at it. A leader's responsibility requires him to know those whom he leads. I can't lead people. I typically, if I know nothing about them, it's hard to lead them. Even if my responsibility is the same for each follower, how I fulfill that responsibility will not be the same. You know, the way I learned this was by being a Christian school teacher. Because I learned real fast. At the beginning, I taught a certain way because that's how I learned. Not how I was taught, but that's how I learned things. I'm a certain type of learner, and therefore I taught that way. But I found out half my class were like this. And the other half's like, yeah, okay. And the other half, and I said, you know, wait a minute. Why is half the class not getting it? Because they learn like I learn, but they don't learn like I learn. And so I can't require everyone to learn like me, so I have to find a way to teach how they learn. And so the onus is on me because I have to know them, my responsibility for them, and I have to teach them in a particular type of way as well. And so I have the same responsibility each follower, but how I fulfill that responsibility may not be the same. What one follower needs from me will not be what another follower needs. And the only way to know that is to know them. So, Del Stein, you're going to have a football team. You're going to have 11 players. I'm going to give you 11 names. You don't know who they are, know nothing about them. I'm going to give you 11 names. I want you to create a football team with them. What would be the chance of that being successful? Because who's going to be the quarterback? Well, the guy who throws the best. Who's that? I don't know. Just pick a name. Doesn't work that way. Who's going to be the running back? The guy who's the quickest. Who's that? I don't know. Just pick a name. It doesn't. You've got to know something about the people you're leading if you're going to organize it in such a way that it'll be beneficial. And so we have to learn. That's why I've got to be careful how I say this. There are certain things that I try to do in order to know the people that I pastor. Part of it, sometimes I might visit in your house. Not because I'm checking up on you. But because I want to know you. It's hard to get to know people in a few minutes between services. Or sometimes now, because of some of you, you know, we have times that apart. Like Doug Vogel, on a Saturday night before church, when a car part won't come off, hey Doug, what are you doing? I need your help, Doug. Really, I really need your help. And we spend 6 hours beating on a car, or whatever it was. It was fun. But we got it. So anyways, but it's time to get to know people. You fellowship with people. You got to know the people you lead. We're not just doing this in a vacuum. No two fathers will be the same. That's true with kids. That's one of the things that surprised me about my five kids. From the very beginning, they're all five different types of people. Okay, no two ministry workers are the same. No, in a secular job, no two workers you have are the same. What one needs a lot of, the other may need a little of, and vice versa. So you have to get to know them, understand them, learn them, because you need to lead them, because you have responsibility to them. Now, let me go a little bit further in a little bit different direction. Watch this. When a follower fails, the first person a leader needs to question is himself. You know, the reason that follower failed may be more you than them. So what do I mean by that? Well, here's a couple of thoughts. Did the leader properly train the follower? Because if you didn't, then why are you surprised when they don't do it very well? I tell this story. I tell it only because Beth is here and I like to embarrass her. And it's not that I'm bitter. I've gotten over it a little bit. But I keep talking about it. And usually if you keep talking about something, it's usually some bitterness there. So I admit to a little bitterness. I had a nice... The year was 1990. 1991, take it back. 1991. Bethany would have been not quite four. I had a 1988 Dodge Caravan. I bought it in 1989. It was red. It was very nice. And I was paying an arm and a leg for it. It was the first car I bought. I had zero credit. And when you have zero credit and you go to the bank, cha-ching for the bank, man, they're going to rack up your interest rate. And so I was paying, my car payment was bigger, was more than my rent. And it was a big chunk of money. But there was our first car. It ran consistently, which was great for us. It was not like the other cars we had. So one day I go out to this beautiful red, nice Dodge Caravan. And I'm walking down the steps like this, walk over to the van, and I go, it was a little dusty, so I said, maybe that's something on the, I mush the dust away. Oh, Bethany, I know she did this. Hey, Beth, come out here for a moment. Yes, Daddy. You see anything on the side of the car? Yeah. What is it? I was writing my name. And from the back of the van till about middle of that big, you know, the door slides open, it was with a rock into the paint. I said, well, number one, that's not your name. and that's not where you're supposed to be writing it. I said, okay, that was it. Now, I could say this. First of all, she was, you know, not quite four, so that's understandable. I've forgiven you. We'll talk about the bill later. I still have a spreadsheet with that on it. But I could honestly say this. I never told her not to. I didn't. I never said, Beth, please do not take a rock and mark up the side of my car. I assumed she would know that. But she's the first. And the first kid always has to learn the hard way, right? Now all the other kids learn from the first kid, all the other kids later. So in some ways, I know that's not a great analogy. What I'm saying is sometimes the failure is, well, I never told them not to do that. So maybe I look at myself. Maybe I didn't train them properly. So if a follower fails, I take responsibility. I said, okay, I got to know them. I got to know, did I train them? This is the idea of knowing them. What do they know? Do they know how to do their job? Did the leader provide the proper resources for the follower? So if they fail, maybe it's me. Maybe I didn't give them what they needed. You know, if you expect, I'll go back to the sensual teachers. If you expect them to teach, then you need to give them a lesson. If you didn't give them a lesson, why are you surprised when they didn't teach anything? Did the leader give oversight or guidance that was necessary? All these things go back to getting to know them and operating within that knowledge and that responsibility. And so if we failed, maybe because we didn't get to know them, because if I knew them, maybe I knew they weren't trained. If I knew them, maybe I realized they didn't have the resources. If I knew them, maybe I understood, you know, really I'm not giving them the oversight and the guidance they need. All these go back to responsibility I have in whatever leadership the Lord has given me. All right, now I'm going to give you the conclusion. We're going to flip it around, the coin around. We're going to look at it from another direction the next lesson. But let me give you the conclusion on this one. One who leads biblically understands that he has God-given responsibilities and must perform them in a way that best honors God. So to lead biblically is to lead with the idea that I have God-given responsibilities. That understanding quickly changes a position of leadership from an ego trip to a labor of love. You know, if you think leadership is, you got a big head about it, then you don't really understand what leadership is. So leadership is not being able to tell, is not simply being able to tell people what to do, but it's taking responsibility for them and trying to help them succeed. Okay, I'll give you another thought here. A responsible leader does not use those whom he leads to build up his leadership, but uses his leadership to build up those whom he leads. I'm responsible for them. Therefore, I need to build them. One last statement. A responsible leader tries to make his followers better, rather than trying to use his followers to make himself better. This is what responsibility dictates. They're my followers. I take responsibility. I need to make them better because that's my responsibility. All right. In the next lesson, we'll kind of flip it around and look at it slightly different, or actually very much different. All right. Let's pray.